Okay, good afternoon, I should say. It's 12:20 p.m. on the 18th of April. I'm actually logged in here from the home office here at Esther's Hall in Maxwell, Texas at NHIHQ here in El Ranchito. And Ernesto is not too far, and Kyle. And so Ernie, today's conversation is going to be about two of our individual topics for the great debate. I'm glad that we have a chance to kind of revive these conversations that we used to do really regularly. And I think they're useful, and I think just helpful for us to kind of refresh our own minds about these concepts and topics and participate in our own way in the conversation, or in hopefully helping to enhance the conversations that the great debate students in particular are having locally right now in certain parts of Texas, or will be having in the course of another 2 to 3 months throughout the United States, coast to coast this year. So I'm going to start off, Ernesto, by reading the extemp prompt. And you, in our previous conversation, you talked a little bit, not only about the history of the great debate, the four-day tournament, kind of how this thing got started, how we ended up at Austin College. But you also shared a little bit about the four different debate styles, or the four different, what we sometimes call events at the four-day. But also talked about how they each relate to a particular type of leadership, especially different ways of communicating, different ways of leading through communications that students will eventually encounter in the future. So extemporaneous speaking is one where students will get a prompt, they'll get a statement, a question, and they will have to react to it with a 30-minute time span. So they have 30 minutes to gather their thoughts, dissect it, analyze it, and start crafting an argument, start crafting a piece that responds to the prompt. So what we don't do in this of the four topics is that this is four of the four topics we give, this is the one where we don't actually give the actual topic, because that's part of the game. So we kind of give a little bit of a narrative to kind of get your mind going. So I'm going to go ahead and read it. You have it there, students, in your briefing book, or the coaches distributed it, or you'll have it there on site when you get to the sixth day. So extemporaneous speaking, in and through their policies and rhetoric, many Latino leaders have promoted an understanding of Latino identity and culture that is based on historical accounts and pre-21st century paradigms. At global, domestic, and local levels, Latino leaders tend to prioritize garnering support for cultural institutions whose purview is retrospective and traditionalist rather than prospective and inventive. Often, in order to persuade outside community investment, many leaders have represented the Latino community as one that is in desperate need, lacking the resources to rely on itself, and in need of external intervention. Is the Latino community's cultural progress measured not by the extent of its evolution, but by the degree to which certain views and their corresponding community change models are preserved or adopted by the new generation? So speakers, we want you to examine and analyze two passages from chapters 14 and 50 of Ernesto's book, first book, Third Reality, Crafting a 21st Century Latino Agenda. Here are two passages that we include. The first one, while these strategies, assimilation, social advocacy, social reform, while these strategies worked in the past, they may not prove as useful in addressing future Latino needs. A different outlook and a new culturally unifying social vision of community needs to be crafted. Second passage. Our part, elders, our part is only to help create and support the venues that cultivate new intellectual growth among Latino youth. But we, the elders, cannot participate in crafting the new. That responsibility and charge must only come from their minds, their imaginations, their ideas. The youth's ideas must be free of our historical biases and prejudices. We have to leave them alone. I think to me, in the end, this final thing wraps up where we want the extempers to kind of focus their thinking. As the architects of our future, participants, that's you, students, we'll consider to what extent, if any, Latino leaders should continue concentrating on showcasing the community from a historical point of view, mainly rooted in the past, perhaps negating the community's capacity to envision itself differently in the future. So I, for one, some of the quick things that get me thinking, I'm with a cultural organization that historically has been a folkloric organization, kind of keeping these traditions alive and keeping these stories of the past and retelling a lot of these accounts. But I think a recent question among especially younger members has been, is that all we're going to do as an organization? Is our whole purpose to just preserve and keep retelling these same stories, presenting these same identities, or is there some growth or opportunity to evolve or to even create new culture and new identity? I think about an NHIer once who made a crack that Latinos, all we want to do is listen to the same songs that our grandparents listened to and their grandparents listened, that we don't, in terms of pop music, we just want to listen to the same thing all the time. He was going to listen to new music. I don't know that's the world we're living in right now, but those are some things that I'm thinking about as I kind of reread this. Is obviously art, culture, these things have the power to impact our thinking, impact a worldview, impact the way that we see things. And so I think what's being challenged is, you know, are we presenting anything new, or are we just becoming better at presenting a lot of the same historical narrative? What's your take?
We have to be very careful, Julio. That was a great read. Students, high school students, what we're asking you to do, high school freshman students, to be exact, to avoid looking at Latino culture as an artifact. Now, what the heck does that mean? It means like taking a vase or taking a ring or taking some kind of symbol and attempting to understand culture through the eyes of what used to be. History, not culture. Does it reflect the culture of those times? Of those times. We are not part of the culture of those times. We get to enjoy interpreting it, understanding it, realizing its significance. But what the question really gets down to is that if you were to be given a paintbrush, what would be something dramatically new that you would propose 20, 30 years into the future that was not about our food, our music, our artifacts, and our way of life? What would you propose that would comprise what our culture should become in its evolutionary way of identifying itself in relationship to other evolving cultures throughout the world? We're not the only culture. Give you an example. My world has been mostly Mexican and Mexican-American. The Mexican-American experience for me has been about racial discrimination. So if I were to describe the Southwest experience from my perspective, I would tell you all the sad stories and tragedies of the people who lived here and who went through these processes of confronting radical opposition to their existence, period, and all of the events in their lives that were negative, hurtful, painful, and so forth. I would report very little in terms of art. Art reflecting those times, maybe yes. But if I wanted to describe my grandchildren's future, what I would want them to adopt is their culture as it relates to as Latinos. I would want them to see themselves as adventurers in the world, as was the situation back in the 1500s.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of a similar topic a couple summers ago, where I feel like we were talking about somewhat identity, but in a different context. But I think what it gets me thinking is that I think, you know, you can go through different communities or different cultures, and there are some that we associate something anthropological or something tangible, like you said, or almost like an artifact, like, ah, yes, this culture, they weave. Ah, yes, this culture, they like spicy food. Ah, this culture, they're very tribal.
They like,
but then there's like other cultures that you're like, oh, yes, they're very ingenuitive, or they're very driven, or they're very forward-looking, or they're very, like, I don't know that Latinos as an identity, that we're often associated with a value or a pursuit or a way of being aside from spicy dancing types.
I was watching a documentary the other day about the migrant community that's going on from South America, Central America, into the borders of Mexico and into the southern borders of the United States. Beyond the suffering and the inconceivable conditions that were present in this documentary, what gave me hope was that sense of family that remained so tight, taking care of the young and the elderly simultaneously, assisting each other in the pathways of the jungles, dealing with the conflicts and misery, and then sitting down in campfires and telling stories and even singing a song or two. Culture outlives suffering. Culture outperforms bad times. So what should our new culture be? What should our new song celebrate? What should our new music be like? What should our new philosophy be like? It doesn't matter what you do. It doesn't matter what you contrive or imagine or invent. The idea is to put ideas on the table for critical examination about where we should go. I mentioned earlier that we should explore the future without understanding the concept of having to discover something. Explore the future of what you want to become. Become like, look like, act like, believe in, and begin to put behind the era of suffering. If it's not suffering, what should it be like? Because it's by looking at what's possible that encourages invention. NHI. It's known as an organization of smart kids. Isn't that cool? We imagine that identity. We didn't present ourselves as minorities, as people that needed a hand up, a leg up. We needed special attention and special encouragement. We said, we have the talent. We have the motivation. We have the imagination. We have the creation. Let's go create something good in our community. And we envision NHI 43 years ago. And when you come through the doors of NHI, we're asking you to do the same. Imagine a better future for yourself, a better understanding of life that excites the generations to move forward, to take chances, to become the new artists, the new musicians, the new mathematicians, the new architects. What should be our calling?
So to wrap up Extemp, Ernie, two things kind of not necessarily on the topic, but would be 2-3 tips that you would give an extemper in terms of how to prep. Right. They got this big prompt. They have this little conversation we just had. They're going to obviously have their local or their site-based training. What's you were a coach. What are one or two ways that an extemper could prepare to get ready for competition?
This is going to sound funny for me, but instruction is not going to help. The idea of extemporaneous is to imagine. And any idea you produce is good. The idea is for you to articulate a something, a possibility, a new thought, a different thought. For example, should our education of the future embrace the global Latino community? Try that one. Should our education require that we master Spanish, that we spend time in other Latin American countries while in high school, while we spend time in their institutions, learning their institutional thought, becoming familiar with how they see the world? What should be our new educational exposure? Should it be purely driven by career opportunities? Well, this is where we're at right now. Where do we fit in this giant maze of job opportunities and professional status? What would be different in the education of young people 20 years from now, given the fact that we're part of 23 other countries, each with his own understanding of his existence and identity? So imagine beyond what's present now. It is hard. This is hard thinking, but this is the whole purpose of NHI. If we come up with one good idea every 10 years, that's good enough for me.
Yeah. But I mean, there are things that I think about now in my 40s that I started asking at 15, at 16, or it was like as a junior counselor at, 18 years old. And it's like, I'm finally getting it now. But so sometimes it's those prompts are long-term. They're going to be with you a long time.
I get a kick out of my granddaughters trying to decide, listen to this one, what they're going to become instead of who they are. I get it because they're at college age. I'm going to go to college so that I can become this. I'm going to study that. I'm going to become a worker at the professional level, period. They're going to wake up, they're going to be 50 years old, doing the same old, same old, same old, same old every day.
It's pretty funny.
How are they going to recraft their social environment? Who are they going to want to accompany them in their future ventures? What kind of people do they want to be part of their lives? Those are good questions to ask yourself, which were not asked before.
Well, on this, the next one is oratory. So where the extempers don't get a prompt and make their speech on their own, they got to use their own creativity. The extempers get it, the orators get it a little different in that we give them, we frame it a little bit more for them. So I'm going to go ahead and read the oratory prompt. This event is meant to stimulate the process by which agendas and proposals are persuasively presented and defended. Although oratory participants are encouraged to be creative and highly engaging, the event is a more formal speaking style. Orators are expected to be expressive and passionate and making an emotional and psychological appeal to the listener. Orators must make a case for celebrating Latino Community Leadership Day during the United States Hispanic Heritage Month, a tradition that highlights the Latino community throughout the United States. And I know it's referred and commented on throughout Latin America. Instead of being a month devoted to cultural preservation, historical remembrance, and honoring the achievements of famous people and celebrities, reframe your role as highlighting local community stories and works that inspire more community investment. Latino Community Leadership Day would honor the impact of local civic and community leaders in your hometown, whether it be an urban area, rural town, or even a city in Latin America. In order to make your case, provide a local example of the type of asset-based, future-looking community and civic leaders that would be an inaugural honoree. So that's the oratory for this year.
That's a hard one. That's a very hard one, because you need to look at the Latino community from several vantage points. There are unannounced, unheralded people in the community doing amazing work and have spent their lifetimes doing that amazing work, whether it's creating a little church, a faith-based church, so that it can address the emotional, psychological, and spiritual needs of a community, or whether it's working with young minds, or whether it's working in the realm of art and art expression or music. There are people that are in the creative business of reshaping the environment, influencing the environment that has been there. Those are the people that oftentimes are never recognized, because this work is done in private and it's special journey driven, meaning that it's a person or a couple of people who dedicate themselves to something that's long term. You know, there are people who in the 1930s in the Houston area who created Spanish speaking schools. The Tijerina family did that in Houston, because most of the people that were coming into the United States were from Mexico. They knew only one language. So how else were they going to learn? If they went to an English-speaking school, they were going to automatically fail. So they made sure that these kids succeeded by doing something special. They never wanted any acclaim. They just did it. My parents were one of a couple like that. They didn't want to be held up as heroes or politicians or speaking to the needs of the masses of Latinos. Generally, you're going to find people in your own community who've done special work for years. Find them, interview them, get to know what motivated them, what continues to motivate them. They're there. Celebrate their spirit, their contribution. Whether it's a young person or an older person, there may be some young person that's working on a new art form that we just don't know about, but it's there. Hip hop was founded in New York City, according to my information sources. But the ability to dance, the ability to set the, was really a contradiction to established norms. And it gave it its own identity and later its own industry.
Yeah. A culture, as we were kind of talking in the previous conversation.
You know, we have art forms that are about to be played out. If we're not careful, conjunto music is suffering. It's about to be suffocated out. It's an art form, ladies and gentlemen. It's an art form. You know, so how do we capture that? How do we capture the compositores, those people who compose the songs? Because in the composition of the songs is a sense of history that gets caught, that gets written up and authenticated in forms of music. The same thing as art, visual art, painting.
I'm going to ask you a kind of different question, but I think it'll be helpful to this conversation. Why do you think it's important to highlight some of these leaders? I feel like the tendency in the community and in schools, especially during, at least here in the United States, during Hispanic Heritage Month, is a lot of historical facts and a lot of celebrities. We talk about a lot of celebrities and a lot of the same historical figures. Why do you think it's important that people take on this topic? But not just for the game, but you know, that this become a practice, something that our community would sincerely adopt.
Art, to me and my way of thinking, art communicates existence of something. It personifies it, statues, visual art, dancing, music, food, the existence of something that influences our ways of thinking. We are impacted by so many forms of art music and so forth that are not ours as Latinos. And yet we learn to put on a coonskin cap. My grandparents and my great-grandparents never wore a coonskin cap. You know, we never knew what a rifle was like that. We never did know a lot of things. You know, but the existence of art to me is the expression of what has been and what seems to be current and sometimes move it into the future. New forms of art. And it allows us to create our identity and our association with the people who are engaged in those art forms. We don't have that much in the United States. We have exceptions. There are efforts going on like in San Antonio and Laredo and other places where, or New Mexico, where virtually most every town has a Hispanic name to the community that you're about to enter or pass through. It gives you a sense of wonderment. And then when you see the art forms in a crystal-like form, meaning in living forms, like if you go to Mexico or Mexico City, or you go to Greece or Italy or wherever you go, and you see what people lived like and what they must have thought like. I was watching a program the other day on Egypt and Cleopatra and the fact that, according to the legend, that she committed suicide once Mark Anthony was dead. And she did that by allowing a snake to bite her, a cobra, as a matter of fact. And I was interested in, if that's true, what really happened in their vying for power? What was the ultimate defeat? Something brought them to a fact. But what was really important is all the jewels that came after they discovered that were part of what they were doing. And most of those jewels were from other countries that they were accumulating. Vast amounts of jewelry that translated into power. Well, from that comes art and these vast sculptures and expressions of art. So oratory to me is the verbal part of art. It's how you're able to describe something of value that's historical or modern or current day. Is it how you use your voice to describe it, to give it passion, to raise hope, to enthuse, to generate energy, and to change mindsets through the use of words, which is a form of artwork in fashion. It's hard work.
I want to kind of, if you were somebody in the, this topic gets me thinking of my hometown recently. Took a critical look at some of the schools, the name of some of the schools, which I know here people think that it's just been a big issue in the South or Southern states of, should we have things named after the Confederate soldiers or Confederate leaders, which has been a controversial subject. But I'm from Pennsylvania, the North, the Union. There were also some names that also needed, that were being revisited by the community. And what they did is that they honored a lot of local leaders. They didn't replace them with another, let's get this general and just get another general, or let's get this president replaced with another president. They just decided to rename the schools. And there's one in particular in one of the communities called Carter McRae. And it's after these two educators. They were just two educators that had a major impact on the city. I think most, the two, they may have passed away, but you know that that school is named after a legacy of educators from that community. And it's not something that maybe anybody in Chicago would know, or Miami or Florida, but in terms of Lancaster, Pennsylvania, those two names, Carter and McRae, they mean something and they tell a story. And so as we're kind of playing with this topic about Latino Community Leader Day and pointing somebody, not another celebrity, not another movie star, although NHI, we have some of those, who would be some of those people that I'm thinking, like in my own town, I could name a good 10 people right now that deserve to be honored. And they're not, they don't have some fancy title. They don't make, you know, billions. They're not running for office, but they make an impact in those communities. Who would be one or two people that you think either here in Austin, Kyle, or even in your own hometown of Houston, that were some of those people? I know you talk obviously a lot about your parents as two kind of local heroes, and a park was named after them, as we know in Houston. Who's some one or two people that you would think? I know one name that comes to mind in Houston is Manuel Rodriguez, who was a longtime friend and supporter and changed and impacted a lot of lives, thousands of lives.
A lot of lives. Yes, he did.
I can't remember
here in town, we have several here in Austin. You know, there's a guy named Roy Guerrero who literally started Pan American Center many years ago. I know there was a controversy about who it got named for, but they're the quiet heroes and heroines of Austin who have done a lot. There are people that introduced, that established commerce and also in the Latino community. Yeah, there were restaurants mostly, but they established commerce and helped create jobs. But they created commercial centers that even continue today. It's not, but so what I'm saying to you is that art, in his art form, in his oratory form, and those kind of things, the artistic form of expression allows you to convey an imagery that's believable and influential. And I think those leaders need to be acclaimed, mentioned, and why they made Roy's Taxi. It's an amazing work of a guy who created his own private transportation company, Roy Velasquez. The work of Richard Moya gave first-time representation in the history of Austin of a county commissioner. And he was not an eloquent speaker. He was just a doer of things. That's why I liked him. But there have been others. There have been many, many others. People that want to.
A few years ago, I met somebody. It was the younger generation of the Hinojosa family that you write about. That was part of in your book about the Tejano millionaires. And I remember the student, we were talking and then they were telling the story of their like grandparents or something. I said, I know who they are. I said, I've never met them, but I know their story. And she's like, how? And I said, well, did you know that, the founders of H&H, like they were part of NHI's original board. And they, there's a stories within Ernesto's book about that company inside. Was it West Texas or South Texas? But it's funny because I think that person was taken back that I knew their family, but it's because you had chosen to honor these Tejano millionaires, as you call them in your book. And I think that people think that that book's going to be like, this is the secrets to how to be rich with like business tips. But it kind of is, but they're more you're honoring these people that had come before you that you were learning from, right? And their legacies.
You're learning from their chapter.
Yeah, and I feel like that chapter is a way of you kind of responding in your own way to the oratory challenge.
You know what I learned so much about myself. When people read in the book Third Reality, the Tejano millionaires, they conclude, oh my God, these were all millionaires. They must have given Ernesto a lot of money.
Exactly, right.
They never gave a penny, with the exception of Willie Salinas. Most of them never gave money. What I learned from them is that they didn't expect things to be given to them, that they could not innovate. They learned to innovate. They learned to stay with their tasks, dedicate themselves to change, and persevere despite the obstacles, despite the challenges. They were going to rise beyond the ashes. And they did, each one in their own right. Livorio Hinojosa in the Rio Grande Valley. Willie Salinas in Odessa and his brother Mario, and here in Austin, the restaurant community, El Gallo, Kennedy was his name, and you go to Dominguez in Dallas. We had 8 restaurants, but he was a dishwasher at one time. So when you got into a conversation with them about what do we do as Latinos, what's his name, Hinojosa, said it well one day. He said, stop begging. I'll never forget that. Don't beg, work. And that's a lesson for me. Lord and I determine no one is going to give us anything, nor should we expect it. Let's innovate. Today we're working in New Mexico. We're having problems in New Mexico. But no, you know what? We decided we're going to make it work. We're going to be more inventive than before, more present than before. We're going to make it work for us. And that's the job of oratory. The job of oratory is to conclude what is the strength of people and who are the people of strength who endured beyond the obstacles, who endured beyond the idea of things being overwhelming and were able to achieve their aims and serve others in the process. It's a lesson for us.
What's your final tip or two tips for an orator in preparing now that they've got the topic in hand, they've got this little convo? What's one or two tips that you give an orator to
learn for the... Well, what they don't know this, but I used to have a rock and roll band many years ago, right? And the idea behind my little rock and roll group, Pura Raza, Puro Latino, was for us to sound like the people who actually sang the songs, like the stars that sang the songs, like whether it was Willie Nelson or Reed or Fats Domino. The idea was to sound like them, but they didn't want a version of them. We had to sound like them. So we did a lot of mimicking, a lot of rehearsals. The idea behind oratory is to learn to use the instrument of voice and expression to drive home your point, to know when to be passionate, when to use a loud voice, when to underscore something, when to pinpoint a thought, how to deliver a message, and how to do that to where you perfect it. When do you change to Spanish? When do you do things, and in what manner? And whether you can do it within a time limit that's given to you. But the idea is message delivery. You have to know when to talk loud and affirmative and strong, or when to whisper and take the audience into the chamber to listen to you and to be as attentive as the message you're delivering, and to use your hands, your eyes, your voice, your volume, your head motion, everything, all like a music piece, like an orchestra, to engage the listener completely.
Well, thank you for taking a little time to do this today. We'll have one more of these for the great debaters, and hopefully you get a chance to talk a little bit about some ways for our LDZers and our CWSers to prepare, and even some of our volunteers and alumni out there. I know that this is hopefully the driver to get these podcasts going again. I know you got a new fancy mic and headset there, so we should be ready to go as we embark onto this coming summer 2023. You know, before we blink, NHI will be celebrating another big anniversary of 45 years, would be like in another year or two, right? Next year. So there's a lot in store.
I'm quitting when I reach 50 years.
I heard that one at the 25, at the 30. At the 40.
Oh, did I say that? Did I dare people before?
I dare you. But no, it's been a good opportunity to do these again. And again, not just do them out of need because we're stuck in our homes, but because I think we were onto something a couple of years ago. So I'm excited to continue these podcasts. In addition to the topics, we'll do some other stuff with alumni and other convos that we had.
We have such an opportunity, Julio, right now in our history to develop so many partners in the community. We're not about becoming assimilated. That's not, even though that may happen. You know, we're not about that. We're not about continuing to complain about things that have not happened to us or should have happened to us. I mean, those things are realistic and they're there. I understand. I have every sympathy and empathy for it. We're about developing strong leaders, strong-minded, articulate, educated, skillful leaders. And we have an opportunity historically that we've never had before. And we need to take every advantage as an institute to be ready and primed for that opportunity and that blessing to work with very bright young minds. I mean, we have young minds running out of our ears at the NHI. The idea is to train them and then turn them loose to see what they create and what they achieve. Thank you for this opportunity.